Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. Welcome back to Art Talk, and to part 3 of The Gaze Reclaimed, our deep dive into the lives and legacies of women who reclaimed their agency and visibility through the power of art. Last week, we followed the extraordinary story of Artemisia Gentilici, a painter forged in trauma and defiance, who painted women not as muses, but as forces. Her allegory of painting shattered conventions of feminine decorum. Her Susanna and the Elders was a visual protest against voyeurism and the abuse of power. Today we meet another prodigy, less famous, no less phenomenal, Elisabetta Serrani. She was born in Bologna in 1638 and, like Artemisia, took up the brush not simply as an artist, but as a woman reshaping history. Elisabetta Serrani was born on Friday the 8th day of January, between the 6th and 7th hour, 1638, and was held at the baptismal font by the most illustrious senator, Signor Saulo Guidotti. That's how she introduced herself in her studio journal, note of the paintings made by me, Elisabetta Serrani. They were precise, confident, and proud. From the beginning, Serrani knew that history remembers those who record themselves. So before we go on, if you are enjoying our talk, I have a big favor to ask. Please like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or Spotify. It helps more than you know. And thank you always for being part of this journey. So let's continue with the art and the artist who dare to lead. Serrani was born into an artistic household. Her father, Giovanni Andrea Serrani, was a successful painter and dealer, and the studio pulsed with creativity. Still, it wasn't a given that Elisabetta would become a professional. Artistic daughters were trained in painting, but not necessarily meant to pursue careers. It took a family friend, the scholar and biographer Count Carlo Cesare Malvasia, to convince Giovanni that Elisabetta wasn't just talented, she was exceptional. And when Giovanni's health declined, it was his 17-year-old daughter who took over the studio. Not just the painting, but the business. Commissions, apprentices, prints, patterns. And here's what truly sets her apart. Elisabetta Serrani was the first woman to open her studio specifically for women. In a society that saw women either as wives, mothers, or nuns, Serrani carved out a fourth possibility, the professional artist, the independent creator. She never married. She never had children. She chose art, deliberately, unapologetically, and she modeled a new identity for womanhood, creative, self-sufficient, and visible. Many of her pupils, once married, abandoned her practice. Serrani remained resolute until her untimely death at age 27. Artemisia and Elisabetta were two women from two cities. Artemisia lived in Rome, then moved through Florence, Naples, and Venice. She married, had 5 children, endured assault, and fought publicly for her artistic legitimacy. Serrani, by contrast, was not forged by a personal tragedy. She lived and worked in Bologna, a city unusually supportive of women's education and artistic participation. Her father's network and studio were a significant platform, but it was her discipline, talent and voice that made the work resonate. Yet, Serrani still had to paint publicly to show the people that she was the one who painted the paintings and not her father. What unites them, Artemisia and Elisabetta, is their radical reimagining of the female subject, not passive, not ornamental, but powerful, learned and brave. Serrani gravitated towards stories of women who acted with purpose, intellectual, moral, and physical strength. She painted at least 14 works centered on strong women from classical, historical, and biblical sources. Why? Likely to assert her own place as a serious artist in a male-dominated world. These weren't just stories, these were reflections. And through them, she made a case for female heroism, capability, and moral clarity. So let's look at two of her most striking works. Judith, Triumphant, 1658, commissioned by Bolognese banker Andrea Catalani. This painting offers a fresh take on a well-worn story. Many artists, including Caravaggio and Gentilici, depicted Judith in the brutal act of beheading the Assyrian general Holofernes. Gore, violence, drama. But Serrani chose a different moment, entirely. She painted Judith after the act, returning triumphantly to Betulia, raising Holofernes' head in the moonlight. The figures are life-sized, torches glow. A nurse and young boys accompany her. This is theater. It is also political allegory. Serrani invites us to contemplate not just Judith's bravery, but its consequences. Liberation for her people. By focusing on the result, not the violence, Serrani centers Judith's leadership, her purpose, her impact. Timoclea of Thebes, 1659, another commission from Catalani, and another remarkable woman. According to classical sources, Timoclea was raped by a Thracian captain after Alexander the Great's conquest of Thebes. When he demanded her valuables, she led him to a well, then shoved him in and stoned him to death. Serrani does not show the rape, nor the stoning. She paints the moment of vindication. Timoclea, firm and composed, stands above the man mid-fall, his limbs flailing, his expression contorted in horror. Her arms press against his knee and his thigh, active, decisive. The lightning, pure chiaroscuro, draws our attention to her determined face and the stunned body of the assailant. It's dynamic, dramatic, and morally pointed. This isn't just revenge, it's justice, it's agency. And Timoclea, like Judith, is not a victim. She is a historical force. Serrani produced over 200 works, astonishing for someone who died at 27. Among them are numerous self-portraits, including her self-portrait as a saint, 1658, the introspective self-portrait in red chalk and grey ink, 1662, allegory of a painting, self-portrait, 1658, and self-portrait painting of her portrait of her father in 1662. In each, she styles herself not with vanity, but with conviction, She is painter, saint, scholar, thinker. Her identity is not performative, it is deliberate, multidimensional. And though she left us too soon, her legacy lived on through the many women she trained, the collectors she impressed, and the stories she rewrote with her brush. Let's look at the prompt this week. The reflection is simple. Take a mirror. Look at yourself. Can you see the outline of a story in which you are powerful, determined, heroic? Sketch that. Sketch yourself with your head held high, with eyes that burn through doubt, with hands steady and brave. Make this a habit, a small act of reclamation, a visual affirmation that your story matters too. And if you'd like a little guidance, check the link in the description for a free visual journaling guide to get started. Next week, we journey to a very different time and place. Edmonia Lewis, the first African Indigenous American sculptor to gain international recognition. From Ohio to Rome, she chiseled her way through stone and stereotypes. Until then, keep reclaiming the gaze. And thank you for being here. I wish you a very peaceful and productive week. And remember, art is the cradle of your soul. Take care.